This week's episode of the Best Practices of Top Practices is brought to you by Hine Diagnostics. Hine Diagnostics supports your practice in maximizing the rate of therapeutic success by identifying the most important risk factors for the progression of periodontal disease. Hine uses marker pathogen analysis and risk determination with MicroIdent Plus, a valuable tool to validate the results of your initial clinical diagnosis. For more information on how to achieve greater clinical success with Hine, visit their website at www.hine-diagnostics.com. That's hain-diagnostics.com. With Hine Diagnostics, when it comes to periodontal disease, treat the cause, not just the symptoms. Welcome to Best Practices of Top Practices with Stephen J. Anderson. If you believe that your team is your most powerful case acceptance tool, that if they are good enough to hire, they are good enough to train, and that you must be as good on the inside as you appear to be on the outside, then we have designed the techniques and systems for team case acceptance that will take your team practice performance to the top. Here's your host, Steve Anderson.
Welcome back to the Best Practices of Top Practices. This is Steve Anderson today, and I am very excited to introduce our podcast program guest on the program today, Dr. Tommy Neighbors from Nashville, Tennessee. Dr. Neighbors is an accredited member of the Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry. He is a 1995 graduate of the University of Tennessee College of Dentistry and is one of the foremost experts on the true nature of periodontal disease as the co-founder and clinical director of the No More Hygiene Seminar and the author of Modular Periodontal Therapy, which is one of the leading therapies treating periodontal disease today. So, Dr. Neighbors, the mission, if you choose to accept it today, we're going to talk about the five myths of periodontal disease that everyone should know. So these are five things that are what I call mistaken certainties. So they're five things that are commonly held as being true that are not necessarily so. So with your great experience in the diagnosis and treatment of periodontal disease, as well as restorative dentistry, here we go. You ready?
I am, Steve. I appreciate it.
All right. Myth number one, periodontal disease is a calculus problem. Just scale it and plane it and you will treat it.
That would have been true in probably 1970. We all want to associate calculus with disease, and it is a byproduct. But when we talk about periodontal disease, we are talking about pathogenic bacteria. When we look at the disease process in the body, then debris is not the enemy typically, but bacteria is. So when we talk about scaling and root planing, are we talking about cleaning? Are we talking about hygiene? Those are all great things that we need to be healthy individuals, just like bathing and washing your hair. But if you're talking about curing disease, hygiene does not do that. All right, so when you have strep throat, you don't get a brush and clean your throat because it's infected or inflamed. So when we start talking about the true nature of what periodontal disease is, it is pathogenic microorganisms or periodontal pathogens, and that's what we need to know in order to treat it effectively.
So you can't just scrape it away?
You cannot just scrape it away, no.
Okay, all right. Myth number two, 6-point probing on every tooth is how you diagnose periodontal disease. That's the standard. True or false?
Well, I'm going to go probably true and false on that one. And so the myth part of that is that's not the only part of the diagnosis. I think anybody in dentistry learns that when you're diagnosing periodontal disease, you have to have a probe chart, right? You have to do the 6-point probing. But all that tells you is that disease has been there. It doesn't tell you whether or not disease is occurring, right? So when we look at that, you know, you're going to look at bleeding on probing, right? That is one of the paramount things that we look for in terms of traditional diagnosis. But the actual diagnosis of the specific disease is done by bacterial testing or salivary diagnostics, meaning we have to know just the anatomical change that a periodontal probe might show us, but we have to know what the bacterial change that has triggered that anatomical change, because tooth structures don't anatomically change for any particular reason. I mean, it's not like just because you get older, you're going to have periodontal disease or decay. There's always a bacterial trigger. And for us in periodontal disease, the ability to use salivary diagnostics to personalize that diagnosis is, again, another paramount key to success.
So essentially you'd say probing will tell you that something's happened that's not good. Salivary diagnostics will tell you exactly what the bug is that's causing the problem. So absolutely. Without the testing, you don't have the whole picture.
Absolutely. You know, I would say, and I say this a lot, none of the UFs would treat without an X-ray from a tooth standpoint. And we certainly get to the point where cone beams are going to be required for us to place implants. So the more information we have before we go to do an invasive treatment, which periodontal disease therapy can be, we want to know what are we going after before we start.
So you got to have the test. You got to know what the biology is to be able to treat it.
Absolutely.
All right. So myth number three, periodontal disease is a dental problem.
Well, it's interesting. It can be a dental problem. You know, as we know that what would we say the number one reason for adult tooth loss is always periodontal disease. Right. And I think, unfortunately, we would consider the mouth as just sort of the tooth holder. Right. In terms of dentistry, we can almost consider our role as dentists is to fix the teeth. And maybe we have a hygienist that treats disease. Maybe we don't. But it's definitely not something that the dentist typically gets involved in. But what we're learning now, what matters now is that periodontal disease is a systemic disease process, meaning that your body is going to fight that infection just like it fights pneumonia. Just like it fights strep throat or sinus infections, chronic inflammation is a body problem. And if it's triggered from periodontal bacteria, your body fights that just like it does anything else. So when we're saying, well, the paramount things that have changed about heart disease is we always want to associate your cholesterol levels with heart disease. But what is the true trigger for plaque accumulation on arterial walls is not cholesterol, but inflammation, right? So what causes inflammation? What's triggering chronic inflammation? And that's where we see these research studies for medicine saying periodontal disease, chronic gingivitis, chronic infections, oral bacteria, those are the kind of things that puts the body under systemic stress. And so that when we say, well, is periodontal disease a teeth problem? Well, it presents as a teeth problem because that's where it presents. But we sometimes lose sight of the fact that that's just the presentation. That's not the disease process.
So it would be safe to say that periodontal disease that presents itself in the mouth is a symptom of a larger problem. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Otherwise, I mean, we're getting research after article, after study, there's any number of medications and publications that are coming out now talking about the relationship between systemic health and oral health.
And some that are interesting that you would never, I had a good friend of mine that works in optometry send me an article from the Journal of Optometry saying that now they're connecting glaucoma with periodontal disease, that they have some of the same causal factors. So it seems like all the bad stuff is going back to one root cause.
It is, and not to get stuck on this one point, but some of the listeners will have heard of the microbiome project in the GI tract. And that's the largest microbiome in the body, meaning that's where millions of bacteria reside, good and bad. But the second largest microbiome in the body is the oral cavity. And so when we start talking about the amount of bacteria that is in saliva and in the oral cavity, and then every time we swallow, you know, we're swallowing, I think one teaspoon of saliva is going to have up to millions of bacteria that we swallow. So
wow.
I know, keeping that but sort of in context, that to think that this is just a pocket problem and that all of our emphasis and all of our treatment is on the periodontal pocket is missing probably the bulk of the picture there.
So just one last little addition to that, to go back to the fact that it's the biology of this is critical. When you test, when you do salivary diagnostics on a patient who has signs and symptoms of periodontal disease, share what you typically find with household members of that same patient if you test the rest of them.
Well, it's interesting because many patients will ask, well, how did I get this? Right? How did I get periodontal disease? And the most common method of transmission is parent to child, because what we in our saliva and in our household is going to be very communicable to one another. And many times the microbiome of the infant is going to be populated by the parent's saliva. And so it's interesting that those same type of pathogens can be handed down generation to generation, just like, wow. Other things can that are a lot better than bacteria. So it's definitely one of those things that's the most common, but to say that there's not vertical transmission, which might be between spouses, or it might be between, you're sharing straws with each other at McDonald's. I mean, it's a communicable infection, meaning that I read an article in the AAP about it's not contagious, but then it goes on to say, but don't share anything with each other. And I'm like, well, that is contagious.
Then why is the how can you say yeah. It's not contagious?
Right. So you come in contact with these microbes, they are not inherently a part of a healthy microflora.
So could you ultimately say, this is probably going out on a limb here, but if it's bacteria that causes not only the dental problem, but also causes all kind of other systemic problems, would it be reasonable to say that potentially heart disease is a communicable disease? Is that going too far?
I would say, it's hard to know. I mean, at this point, because there's so much information coming out about cardiovascular disease and periodontal disease in terms of triggering chronic inflammation. And so the question would be, does periodontal disease cause heart disease? And we would initially say, and in the past have said, no, it's a risk factor, right? You're placing yourself at a greater risk of heart disease by having periodontal disease. But now there's studies coming out, and as late as 2015 was the last one I read, where now they are considering periodontal disease causative agents of cardiovascular disease. So having that alone can cause heart disease. And I think as medicine explores, heart disease is the number one killer of everybody in America. I mean, it's number one. So as research goes on how we can control that, I think we're going to find that oral health is going to be a significant factor in that. And, to go on even further, I think people don't realize the magnitude of the infection in a periodontally infected mouth. The surface area of the tissues in the mouth are about the same size as your hand. And if you had a hand infection that all four of your fingers and your thumb was being eroded by bacteria from the inside out, and you're sitting there looking at your hand and it's basically dissolving from an infection, we would absolutely be in the emergency room. And any MD would consider that a systemic problem, meaning we don't want a blood infection because of this massive infection in your hand. But yet a periodontal infection will destroy the bones of the skull, which are way closer to your brain and to your heart and to your carotid arteries than your hand is. But yet we want to treat periodontal disease like it's some sort of thing we want to probe and watch. And let's literally, our insurance companies will say, let's wait until you have bone loss before we'll even cover the treatment, which is absurd to me, that when we have gingivitis, which is the reversible form of this disease, that we cannot treat it there according to insurance companies, because they literally want to wait till our head starts to dissolve until they're going to recommend treatment.
So it's kind of like, you're Mr. Patient, you got a staph infection, but you're waiting until it gets all the way to the bone before we treat it.
Yeah. Yeah, could you imagine you go to the emergency room with an infection in your finger and the nurse pulls out a probe and sticks it in the cut and goes, I don't know, not in the bone. Your bone of your finger is not infected. It's only a 3. But when I can get another millimeter into that bone of your finger, maybe we'll treat it. So you clean it. I want you to wash it. Come back in 6 months. And if you still have the end of your finger and it's not, you know, necrosed away, then we'll start to address it. Maybe.
It's crazy. It's crazy when you think about it that way.
Yeah.
All right. Myth number 4. Speaking of bone, myth number 4, you cannot regrow bone.
I would say that's absolutely a myth. And one of the things, the reason I know that is because we see that, you know, when you are treating a disease, because when we were taught periodontal disease, once a perio patient, always a perio patient, which never made sense to me because that's like, we can cure cancer. We can cure heart disease. We can cure so many life-threatening illnesses. And yet we can't cure periodontal disease when we know exactly what the microbes are. But it really wasn't until DNA PCR testing that allowed us to really understand the source of the infection. But the medical truth here is that the body cannot heal in the presence of infection. So if we never know if we got rid of the infection or not, because we've never tested it, we may clinically make someone look better, but that doesn't necessarily mean they are. I said, you know, I heard from a patient this morning, she's a nurse practitioner, and they have a poster in their office that says, if you want to know what cardiovascular disease looks like, here it is. And it's just a picture of a guy standing there.
Normal everyday guy.
Normal everyday looking guy. Mm-hmm. So we cannot get trapped into thinking that just because something looks okay, that it actually is. And being able to eliminate the infectious agents in our body, we are built to heal. If we can't regrow bone, then we can't regrow bones when they break, right? We can't adapt bone to an implant. That's not long junctional epithelium that connects to an implant when you place it, or when you're screwing bones back together that are broken with titanium screws. Otherwise, there'd be bodies walking around with long junctional epithelium everywhere. That's the only thing that holds us together when we break something.
All right.
So bone has the ability to regenerate, but understanding and eliminating the infection, regardless of what part of the body it's in, is the critical point there.
So bone that's been eroded by periodontal disease will not regrow if there's still infection. They're no better than a broken arm will not heal if there's infection around the bone. Same principle, right?
It is. And I think, you know, so the dentists don't freak out on me here. And we're not talking about massive horizontal bone loss, because it's just like when you're doing a bone graft, the more walls of bone that you still have that are healthy when you go in to do a graft, the more likelihood you are that your graft is going to be successful. But to go in there on a long-term perio patient that has horizontal bone loss, you know, from 2 to 14 and all the way across the anteriors with black triangles, you're not going to regrow that. But if you got a vertical defect around 14 and you've got some walls there, bony defect, you've got furcation involvement where there's bone support, then, or scaffolding for lack of a better word, you are going to have the potential to regrow some of that. And we've got case after case after case to show that.
But you've got to get rid of the infection. It's got, the only way it's going to regrow is in a clean, pristine environment. No infection allowed.
Absolutely.
All right, myth number 5, you've already mentioned it. The age-old mantra, once a 49-10, always a 49-10.
Yeah.
True or false?
I mean, again, that may have been true at one time. But if we believe that in 2018 that we cannot cure periodontal disease, then we're behind. Because what I can tell you is that the literature supports curing this. We don't want people on long-term care. We don't want them on long-term medications. We don't want them having to see us every 3 months for a disease process. Because if they're that diseased, then can you imagine the chronic inflammatory implications of the whole body that that's having? And so I think our job is to cure periodontal disease. I think a critical point would be that we're not immunizing people from periodontal disease. So if they have a spouse or a significant other that has periodontal disease and they like each other, then they can become reinfected. So it's not that you, once you cure someone or once you help someone heal or once you eliminate an infection, that doesn't mean they can't get it again. But to say that we can't stop it and heal it, I believe to be false. I believe that we can.
All right. So I think the final note on that is that that phrase, once 4910, always 4910, has come from the insurance part of things, which is once somebody has periodontal disease, you bring them back for periodontal maintenance every 3 months. How you code it, that phrase has then implies that you can't ever cure it. So would you say you can continue coding it a 4910 and you can cure the disease? Is that fair?
That's fair. And I think it's interesting when you think about the way insurance looks at this, because when you're talking about an infection, and if we sort of parallel how medicine looks at infection, you know, to say that your insurance company is only going to cover your disease to the point of destruction, to the point of that where that disease has caused destruction, that therapy can be initiated at that point, but then also that they're going to keep you in that disease recall state for the rest of your life. I just don't think that that's prudent. I don't think that that's current in what literature will tell us. So yes, are periodontal patients that have had destruction in the past, are they more susceptible to the disease process in the future? Yes. So I absolutely agree that we can increase our recall frequency, but we do it because we want to keep them healthy, not because some insurance company is telling us that they're going to be a perio patient for their whole life.
You got it. So myth number one was periodontal disease is a calculus problem. It is not just a calculus problem. It is a bacteria problem. It is a bacterial infection and needs to be treated as such. Myth number two, 6-point probing is how you diagnose periodontal disease. That is not the only way you diagnose, but that in addition to salivary diagnostics. Myth number three, periodontal disease is a dental problem. Well, it's not just a dental problem. It is a systemic problem. Myth number four, you can't regrow bone. And as we've discussed, yes, you can. In the absence of disease, bone can regenerate. And finally, myth number five, once 4910, always a 4910. And again, you can cure it. You want to always make sure you maintain a healthy environment, but periodontal disease in many cases can be cured. So we are now going to W, Dr. Nabors, the myth buster, the periodontal disease myth buster. So you've spent your whole life, not just a career, but your whole life studying this and really being a pioneer. And so a couple of recommendations is what we always do on our podcast program. So a couple of recommendations here. One is go to knowmorehygiene.com to get more information about modular periodontal therapy. That is the protocol that Dr. Nabors has developed over decades to properly treat and cure, in many cases, periodontal disease with your patients. It will revolutionize the way you treat and treatment plan and treat periodontal disease. No More Hygiene courses are held all over the country throughout the year. And you can find that information at nomorehygiene.com. Recommendation number two, we've talked about salivary diagnostics. And the recommendation here would be to go to heindiagnostics.com. That's H-A-I-N diagnostics.com. And the salivary test is the microident test that can be done chair side, set in, and then results sent back of the exact type of bacteria that is at the root of the periodontal disease problem, so you can properly diagnose and treat what's really going on. So those two recommendations, Dr. Nabors, thanks for being our guest today.
Awesome, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for all you're doing to save the world from periodontal disease. Awesome. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon on our next episode of the best practices of top practices. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Best Practices of Top Practices. You can follow Steve on Facebook at Stephen J. Anderson and Instagram at The Stephen J. Anderson. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join us next time for more best practices of top practices. Thanks for being with us.